May it please the Court, my name is Kevin Kelbel, and with William R. Hobson, who's seated at council table, we represent Rhonda Smith, the appellant. I'm going to try and reserve 2 minutes of my time as well. Rhonda Smith is legally blind. She was a first-year kindergarten teacher at Noah Webster Basic School, and she was not offered a second-year contract for the reason that she did not fit in. I don't think there's any question if she had been told you don't fit in because you're blind, that would be a violation of the ADA. So at summary judgment, I think the only issue is, could a reasonable juror have inferred from the evidence in the record that what they meant by you don't fit in is you don't fit in because you're blind? And there are three pieces of evidence that support that inference. First, there's the testimony of the school's director, Kelly Wade. She testified that she didn't believe a blind person could be an effective teacher. Then there's a second portion of her...
Well, that's not exactly what she said.
She said that with a proper accommodation they might be able to do, but she didn't know what accommodation could be afforded to a blind teacher that would make her better.
That is not necessarily either what she said. It was my understanding from reading the record that she did say that she couldn't be an effective teacher without accommodation, and she did say that she didn't understand a term that was specifically asked of her. But she did suggest all the things that she thought ought to happen in order to help this particular teacher.
Well, what she said was, if you have accommodations, then I don't know what those would be if you are blind. I think at summary judgment, the fair inference from that comment is, I don't know what accommodations we can make for a blind person. But there's more than just that statement. There's the discussion she had with Mr. Hobson at her deposition about the Noah Webster document that was entitled Concerns About Rhonda Smith. And the concern is her ability to see impairs her ability to perform her job accurately. Did I read that right? Was the question. She says yes. And then that document goes on and lists all of the concerns. They included copier usage, cannot see clearly to push buttons. She has to put her face about an inch away from the display screen to see. Teacher observed her and had to assist her. Cannot drive, so she walks to school, has other employees pick her up and take her home. Does not see the principal or vice principal when they come into the classroom. Not being able to see her students perform on stage. She does not notice when the individual students are hurt or misbehaving, and that's because she couldn't see them. She calls students by the wrong name because she cannot distinguish between them. The phonics charts are often set incorrectly because she does not see them. Too hard for her to see the misbehavior, so she just tells them to be quiet. This memo that Noah Webster produced in Discovery ties the classroom performance to her visual disability.
That would indicate that they were, I mean, all of those things, you're not challenging that all of those things are not true. That could be before you can make any accommodation, you have to understand what the problems are. So I don't...
Well, doesn't all this, I mean, I guess what my colleague is trying to suggest, doesn't this all come from her actual observation and evaluation?
Yeah.
No, I don't believe so. There's a list of observations that were made about Rhonda Smith in the October evaluation. And then after that was that October 9th classroom accommodation list that she gave to the school, and they provided her those things. And the areas that they deemed needed improvement in October, she actually improved all but one of them by the March review. But they never came back to her after October and said, at any time, it said, you're in danger of losing your job, that these are the other areas we've since identified that need an accommodation. There was no discussion of accommodation after October.
Let me ask you another question that I don't quite understand. She was not terminated. I thought that her contract was not renewed.
She was not offered a new contract for the second year. And in the teaching profession, that's, if you're performing well, she's not entitled to it. So if you want to look at that, then you're really looking at she was not offered a contract in the first instance for the second year, and then that would tie into the qualification standards in the application that list visual acuity and peripheral vision and the ability to change
focus.
Well,
they hired her, they evaluated her, they kept her for the full year. They did not renew her contract. As I understand it, they did not renew other teachers who were not disabled as well.
Correct, but they didn't tell the non-disabled teachers that they did not fit in. And you're allowed, if there's no burden on the school to provide accommodations to non-disabled teachers. So if the non-disabled teachers are not meeting the performance standard, they can just let them go. If a disabled teacher's not meeting the performance standard, you have to engage in the interactive process, and that never happened. And with respect to the qualification standards being applied to Rhonda when she was originally hired, I don't think they understood, and it's pretty clear from Rhonda's testimony, just how bad her visual impairment was. Bill Taylor, who actually did the interview, said, I didn't consider her disabled during the interview. I knew she had a visual impairment. And I think what happened is, in the course of the year, they figured out just how bad her limitations were. And when it came time to offer her a new contract, they decided the burdens of having a blind teacher were too much. And when they said, you don't fit in, it was, you don't fit in because you're blind.
Well, what about the fact that they cited all of these reasons?
All those reasons.
They had nothing to do, and they seemed to match up with what they had observed.
All those reasons, though, were things that were first presented in the litigation. They didn't tell any of that to Rhonda while she was working there. That wasn't the reason they gave her when they terminated, when they offered her a new contract.
Okay.
And if these reasons exist, if they had knowledge of these during the school year, then the ADA interactive process requires them to go to Rhonda during the school year and say, here's the problems we think you're having. You can't see kids raising their hands. You can't read the phonics charts. You can't properly administer discipline because you can't see who's misbehaving. Those are things that they should have come to her with during the school year and seen if there was an accommodation. And if they had done that, then at the end of the year, if she's still not performing, they can let her go.
And your bottom line is what? What do you want from us?
We would like summary judgment reversed and let her have her case tried to a jury. I think there are several questions of fact and evidence that the judge improperly weighed.
What do I do with Brown versus Lucky Stores, which suggests that an employer only initiates the process of interactive process when requested by the employee?
Well, in order for the employee to request the interactive process, she has to know that they consider her performance deficient. The October 9th, the October evaluation, from where all those observations come from, she got a 95% score. She got 70 out of 74 points. She was told she was doing a good job and giving suggestions to improve those few areas. She had no idea she was underperforming. If I had a 95% rating in law school, I might have gotten a job at this firm over here. I mean, that's a remarkable score for a first-year kindergarten teacher.
Your firm doesn't like 95% or
something? I think where I was standing in the class would not have gotten in the door, Your Honor.
What are the other issues that you think the judge overlooked, factual issues?
Factual issues? One of the key things is that when they say they terminated her for didn't offer a new contract because of performance, is they gave her the maximum performance bonus. And that's evidence that contradicts their later adopted non-discriminatory reason. And the judge says, well, that doesn't undercut their substantial evidence. Well, it's summary judgment. If we have evidence, she's not supposed to weigh that.
Well, as I understand it, the judge found there was no direct evidence of discrimination, and therefore we had to apply the burden-shifting analysis.
Correct.
And the judge suggests that in order to do that, one should show that one was qualified, able to perform with reasonable accommodation. And as I understood what the judge said, she was given one-on-one training where others were not, and on computer skills, for instance, and that was because they were trying to help her with accommodation. That nobody told the administration about the teacher who was saying she couldn't do her work or whatever, and so therefore they couldn't deal with that. Now I guess what I'm trying to deal with is, what do I say is the substantial evidence that establishes the prima facie case of discrimination?
First, with respect to whether she was capable of doing her job, that's not the exact standard the judge applied. She said there was evidence she was not performing her job, and that was the argument that Noah Webster advanced. That's the wrong standard. The standard is she capable of doing her job? 95% on the first evaluation shows she's capable of doing her job. There's no dispute that she's disabled. And there's the proffered reason for termination that she was underperforming is contradicted by the fact she had a 95% rating and got a maximum performance bonus. I have 6 seconds left.
Yes, we'll give you a minute. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
My name is Jennifer Crockett-Murphy with the law firm of Dunmore-Craig, representing the Appalachian Yellow Webster Family School. This morning I would like to focus on two areas during my time.
Could you, excuse me, could you bring the microphone down a little bit and speak into it? Thank you. That's better. Or no, that's a little bit much.
Too far.
That's better.
The first area I'd like to talk about is the interactive.
I think, Madam Clerk, you need to turn on her mic somehow, because we cannot hear it. I mean, you can hear her, but you can't hear the mic.
Can you speak to the mic again?
Is that fine
now? No. We don't hear only you, so you'll have to speak up.
Okay. Let me know if you can hear
it. Well, just speak up. This is working.
We're really going loud. We're really going loud now, but you're still not mic up.
All right. I'd like to focus on two areas. The first is the interactive. Conspicuously absent from either the brief or the oral argument is any case or other legal authority that Miller Webster was obligated to engage in the interactive process in March of 2007. In fact, the case is contrary. Absent the employer being on notice that performance-related reasons are caused by a disability, the employer should not be approached that with the employee. In fact, EEOC guidance on this point is clear. The EEOC guidance says, and I agree, that an employer mentioning an employee's disability during a discussion about a performance or a conduct problem if the employee does not do so. The EEOC response is generally it is inappropriate for an employer to focus discussion on performance or conduct or disability. Rather, it is an employee who is familiar with the condition who is obligated to notify the employer that accommodation is required. There is no dispute in this case that Ms. Smith ever requested an accommodation related to these performance issues. The EEOC guidance further states, must an employer ask whether a reasonable accommodation is needed when an employee has not asked for it? Again, the EEOC is clear in the Ninth Circuit case law is in force. Generally, no. As a general rule, the individual with a disability must inform the employer that an accommodation is needed. There is only one exception to that rule, which is not applicable. And that is when the employer is aware of the disability and knows or has reason to know that the disability prevents the employee from asking for an accommodation. That is simply not the case presented here. Indeed, Ms. Smith was aware and, in fact, in October had asked for reasonable accommodation. And, in fact, the school provided those requested accommodations. Indeed, Your Honor, in regard to the interactive process, her testimony is as follows. Mr. Taylor is the vice principal of the school. Did you ever go to Mr. Taylor and talk to him about any sort of issues with your vision? Answer, yes, I did. What was this conversation? Answer, it was just about accommodations and what they wanted me to do and things I thought would work for me. Was Mr. Taylor receptive to you talking to him? Yes. Was there multiple conversations or just a couple? I believe there was a couple. Did Mr. Taylor have time to talk to you? Yes. Did he push you off? No. Did he listen to what you had to say? Yes. Did he provide feedback? Yes. Were you satisfied with this conversation? Yes. In these circumstances, say that the employer did not engage in the interactive process with Ms. Smith defies reality.
Well, let me,
if I could, I'll move back. Let me ask about, you know, there are two or three comments here which are pretty, if you will, worrisome. At least I would say if I were in your shoes. The first comment is, why was she terminated? She didn't fit in. Now, the next comment that I would talk about is, a blind teacher cannot teach effectively. Those two comments, by themselves, it seems, and maybe you need to address this pretty carefully, are at least direct evidence that should get to a jury, or they're at least some evidence of pretext that ought to get her to the jury.
Happy to address those, Your Honor. First of all, the comment you don't fit in is by definition not direct evidence. The Ninth Circuit has previously defined direct evidence as evidence without inference or presumption that demonstrates discrimination. In this case, the comment you don't fit in is by itself ambiguous. In fact, even the plaintiff conceded she did not know what Ms. Wade meant by that comment. So I think on its face, the comment you don't fit in does not constitute direct evidence.
Would it not go to the pretext, though?
Your Honor, it may be an issue that it is a test rate as a pretext. Again, in the Ninth Circuit, on the Bradley v. Hardcore, they are entitled to the same aspirin inference. In that case, Ms. Wade hired her knowing she had a visual impairment, and did not renew her contract, knowing she did not have, or knowing she had a visual. In that case, the Ninth Circuit says there is the same aspirin inference. And there, in light of that, there has to be very substantial evidence to create an issue of pretext.
What inference do I have to make from she didn't fit in?
Your Honor,
I don't see how one could say she didn't fit in without saying she isn't the same as others who were there. Now,
Your Honor, I think in this case, comment you don't fit in has to be evaluated in the context of the fact that throughout her performance, there is no question she was observed on multiple occasions, evaluated on multiple occasions, and repeatedly told that her performance was lacking. Given that that was...
I don't know whether she was told her performance is lacking when she gets a 95% rating and get the bonus at the end for doing a great job.
Well, let me address those two things because I think those are a slight distortion of the record. In terms of the bonus, and you can look at Ms. Wade's testimony, I think it's page 89 through 94. Basically, all of the kindergarten teachers receive the exact same bonus. And because the majority of those bonuses were based on performance standards that were group standards, not individual standards. There were standards that if the kindergarten class achieved certain progress, that was more than half the bonus. Another component of the bonus was whether or not the children's attendance rates were high. Again, that was a selective rate. So the fact that she achieved the maximum bonus, I think, is a little misleading in the context and certainly doesn't raise an inference to discrimination. And the second point in terms of her statement, you don't fit in. Your Honor, again, not direct evidence of discrimination. The question is, she has told her repeatedly, and again, if you look at our answering brief at 6-7, I provide a citation for this. Plaintiff concedes that school criticisms of her were accurate observations, were communicated in an effort to improve her teaching, and were important to her daughter's teaching. She received in 8 categories a needs improvement ranking in March of 07. By definition, that is not satisfactory.
Well, you can easily say she had non-satisfactory performance, and you would have covered all of that. You don't usually say she didn't fit in.
Your Honor, if our teachers are exceptional teachers, the comment, you don't fit in, given her unsatisfactory performance, is entirely consistent. This is not a situation where, in fact, our rationale was developed after the fact. These observations were contemporaneous, communicated to her, and she was given the opportunity to prove it.
How were they communicated to her?
Sorry, Your Honor.
I didn't mean to blast.
They were communicated to her on a couple of ways. First of all, following the observations, she admits that the vice principal sat down and spoke with her. The formal evaluations, there was actually a separate meeting in which she was spoken to, and she actually, if you look at the evaluation, signed off on the form.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
The only thing that distinguishes Rhonda Smith from the other teachers at Noah Webster Basic School is she's blind. So when she's told she doesn't fit in, that's the only characteristic that distinguishes her from everybody else. The idea that they gave everybody the performance bonus up the same, the kindergarten, that's not supported by the record, because the two teachers that were let go, when Kelly Wade was asked if they got the maximum performance bonus, she says, I don't know. Not everybody got the same bonus. Those were not kindergarten teachers, but that plainly from that testimony, you know, it wasn't an across the board for every grade level. And the form that they used to calculate that is an individual form. It says your performance, your attendance, and your professionalism. The case law that supports there has to be an ongoing interactive process is in the brief at Sumpy versus Memorial Hospital. And they almost got it right in October. That was the interactive process. They evaluated her. They went back to her and says, what do you need to improve in these areas? They never did it again. In March of 07, they never went back to her and said, these are the problems you're having. And they knew it was disability related because there's two memos they have.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
The court appreciates the argument of counsel. The case just argued is submitted for decision.